This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, it's time to talk commodities on the panel as Chinese growth has slowed to the lowest annual level in 28 years. As I've said earlier, we would still bite your arm off for 6.6% annual growth. But for China, it does raise all sorts of questions particularly around its manufacturing sector, which doesn't seem to be good news for commodities. So what's the outlook for precious and base metals in 2019 following a pretty abysmal 2018? Well, I've got René Hochreiter, platinum analyst at Noah Capital in studio, alongside Dale Hutchinson, senior investment analyst and portfolio manager at APSA Asset Management, and Andries Rousseau, PwC assurance partner. Evening, gents, and thanks for joining the commodities panel ahead of the mining indaba. Dale, perhaps you can give us the broad overview here. Commodities really took a kicking in 2018. We saw almost across the board deep losses in everything from oil and copper to coffee and sugar, but we're talking base and precious metals. What's the macro environment looking like for both of those as we head into the new year?
Obviously, the world is very concerned about China slowing down and the growth slowing there. And I think that's reflective in a lot of the base metal pricing and some of the precious metals. But the outlook certainly isn't all gloom, doom and gloom. I mean, we saw palladium continue to rally very strongly. I mean, gold is certainly off its lows. Again, maybe that's reflective of some of the concerns that exist out there. But we're not certainly forecasting yet a collapse. And I think a lot of people are waiting for further Chinese response to their slowdown in growth. And it's maybe just a question of time. A lot of the response that we, regulatory response that we've seen at the moment has all been around, you know, some tax incentives and tax breaks and that for individuals trying to drive consumer sentiment and that. You know, the really big stuff that the commodity guys need is, you know, around real estate and that sort of thing. And we still wait to see. I think if things get tougher, that's maybe when we'll see those responses.
Looking at those precious metals, Andries, and obviously they've got many attributes, and they're hedges against inflation, they hedges against blowouts in fiat currencies and central banks going mad with the printing presses and all that sort of thing. Gold bulls have really seized the momentum to begin the new year. So it looks like there's a return to the safe haven qualities of gold. Do you see that holding up in 2019?
I think the fact that we don't have the excessive interest rate increase in the US coming through does make gold a good alternative investment while there is some inflation fears. And its safe haven status will definitely continue in this year. Gold has been outperforming actually the last few years if you compare them to most of the other commodities compared to their long-term averages. And it just shows the risk perception that our world is in at the moment. Uncertainty is never good, but it is good for gold prices. And the trade wars, the uncertainty around the future of the economy does bring investors back to gold.
And if gold has been unloved and we see some love returning, then silver was positively disdained by investors last year. Any thoughts on the silver market and where we might be going? I know there's a lot of movement in ETF holdings, despite a modest price rise that we saw in the fourth quarter. We saw investors scaling back on ETFs. I was looking at a silver chart the other day, and it almost mirrors that of Bitcoin better than gold.
Yeah, silver is an interesting commodity. It doesn't have true value except if you link it on to investment value that gold has. And we've seen platinum come down significantly as well, certainly not having the investment support. So it looks like everyone is sticking to gold and not investing in these other potential investment commodities.
We'll have to see how those jewelry sales go over in China and some of those big consumer markets such as India as well, big gold market that. René, looking at PGMs, there used to be two truisms in PGMs, that you never go short because they've got the capacity to surprise and it could be an expensive exercise. And also, if you see car sales going up, so goes platinum. Both seem redundant these days. That correlation has broken down. Give us a recap of what we saw in the PGM market in 2018 and where you see us going into the new year.
Well, in 2018, Just by the way, the best performing share on the JSE last year was a platinum share, Anglo Platinum. So despite what you said at the beginning about commodities really being down last year, it was 50% up for the year. It's the best performing big cap stock, and it's amazing for a sector which everybody loves to hate. But last year, platinum did very little, and I don't think it's going to do much again this year, mainly because the alternative, palladium, in autocats, which is the biggest demand sector for platinum and palladium now, is not yet twice the price of platinum, which most people think is going to be the level where switching back to platinum occurs. The other thing is rhodium is doing very well. Now, rhodium did very well last year, so did palladium, but rhodium did exceptionally well because rhodium is actually 7 times more efficient than palladium in a gasoline engine. So rhodium is sitting at about $2,470 an ounce. So 7 times, divide that by 7, you're looking at $350 an ounce compared to where palladium is now at $1,400 an ounce. You've got to be crazy not to go for rhodium. And Anglo Platinum, by the way, has got a deal whereby you will never pay more than 5 times the palladium price if you take their rhodium. So they're leaving a bit on the table for everybody. So the way I see it going forward this year, I don't think much is going to happen in platinum. Palladium has not gone far enough yet. Rhodium, 5 times 1,400 is 7,000. Rhodium can go to $7,000 an ounce before they start buying palladium for the customers who have taken the Anglo-Platts deal. Iridium and ruthenium are very interesting. They are used in the cathode of the fuel cell. Now, the fuel cell is still a little bit of a way out. I think maybe by 2025, the Chinese are telling us they'll have 1 million fuel cell vehicles, and each fuel cell vehicle takes 1 ounce of platinum. So there's 1 million ounces in the 6 million ounce market already. So it's and by 2030, they reckon 2 million cars, fuel cell cars. So platinum is looking good further out, not in the short term. Palladium is looking good short term because China's just brought in China 6. There's various other reasons why palladium, I've just said it, why palladium is doing very well. So in the short term, yes. But further out, I really see good demand for platinum.
Do we still have a handle on the size of stock levels above ground in terms of what's being recycled out there?
I think they're irrelevant. They've always been there. And in a bear market, they become important. In a bull market, they become irrelevant. The SFA guys in London will tell you that there's about 2.4 million ounces of platinum stocks now sitting on surface. There's very little palladium stock sitting on surface, except if you talk to Norilsk, they reckon there's quite a lot sitting up there.
Yeah.
But those stocks, I don't think, will ever come down. I think we actually have to ignore those stocks because they're always, it's work in progress. Everybody has some stock, you know, just in case something goes wrong in South Africa.
Now, to stop us from ever doing an OPEC on the world when it comes to the PGMs, the banks might have to start renaming their cards rhodium or palladium cards, I fear, though it doesn't look like platinum's going to be catching up anytime soon. Dale, that said, though, from a company level perspective, obviously Amplats has done very well, and with that rhodium deal, as Rene has said, a very attractive counter at the moment. Are there any others, Sibanye perhaps?
Certainly still like Anglo Platinum as the quality play within that space. And, you know, if palladium and rhodium, etc., continue to do well, certainly I'm very happy to own it. In terms of the rest of the sector, obviously the more marginal producers have more gearing to some of this upside if prices continue to rally. Speculative buyers would be things like Sibanye, certainly with their palladium exposure through Stillwater in the US is looking very interesting. Yes, there's some risks you have to watch out for with respect to gold and platinum strikes in their operations locally, but that certainly looks very interesting and certainly hasn't had the rally that maybe some of the other platinum stocks have had. So yes, I'd certainly be looking at the most of them actually in this market if the prognosis for palladium to continue to hold up and rhodium you know, the basket looks very attractive and most people are actually making money here.
And that's how you have to look at them, as a basket. You know, we tend to focus and quote the platinum price. We should be quoting the
in dollar terms.
Yeah,
we should be looking at the ZAR price, at the rand price.
Yeah.
If I put in the average last year for the rand was 1325, well, virtually the same as the year before, but this year our economists and our own sort of analysis is looking at about 1434 to the rand. If I put in 1434 for this calendar year into my earnings for all the platinum companies, Anglo Plat's earnings go up 100%. Okay, and their dividend is already looking at like about 10 to 15 rand for the year that's just finished. It could be in the 20 to 25 rands. That's Anglo Plat's. Now you get to the more marginal ones like Impala, Sibanye, not Northam, but some of the more marginal ones, they're going to shoot the lights out this year, mainly because of the rand, 1420,
yeah,
because it's so marginal already,
yeah,
and because the palladium price is doing very well, the platinum price and the rhodium price at 2500 or so. The platinum price at 800 is actually damn good if you convert it through the basket price.
Yeah, and the other potential risk, I guess, in the South African context, Andries, is what Dale touched on, and that is labour issues. It does look like Neil Froneman is staring down AMCU at the moment. It'll be very fascinating, actually, to see how that pans out there and to see whether or not AMCU will actually be around in 2020 and beyond. But how do you see some of those challenges impacting on our local miners in the Rustenburg region?
I think the reality is it's not the price that we need to focus on. It's controlling the cost to get the metal out of the ground. And labor in our mining context, certainly for deep-level conventional mines, is by far the biggest contributor, more than 50% of operating cost. So, and that cost has been growing well in excess of inflation as a result of union negotiations and the like. It means that our marginal mines become even more marginal, even if prices go up, because the increase in costs just supersedes the increase in prices. When you then have a militant labor set up where there's strikes, that adds to the cost because you are paying people and you're not really getting value out of it, although no work, no pay does go. Mm. The reality is once you've got a strike, the productivity after a strike is lower for much longer than everyone anticipates. And you don't get value out of your labor force that needs to provide productive labor and value.
And you've also got Eskom asking for another 15% from NERSA. Yeah. So there's a massive input cost as well. But, you know, as the saying goes in mining, it's tonnage to the mill. I just want to move on to the other base metals, then we can come back to platinum towards the end, just so we can get through all of them for the listeners. When it comes to base metals, Dr. Copper, as it's known, is always a good gauge of where we are in terms of the state of the health of the global economy. It's used in so many industrial processes. And copper seemed to drop every quarter in 2018. Just take us through where we are in the copper market.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of 2018, everyone was very optimistic around copper and the potential of the metal. We're going into more consumer-driven demand for copper, electric vehicles and the like, all has a very high copper loading. And added that onto the infrastructure-driven demand for copper, there was the expectation that copper would really do well in 2018. And you could see it in the transactions that happened, Glencore buying into copper and cobalt in the DRC and Zambia. The only major new commodity projects that was announced last year related to two copper projects in Latin America and South America. And so therefore, we were all optimistic copper would do better. It didn't. It didn't quite decrease every quarter, but it certainly on average for the year wasn't where we would have liked it to be. And that's a reflection of, I suppose, the economy in China and demand and the concerns that was raised at the beginning of the conversation.
Dale?
Yeah, I can echo the same comments and go back to my previous comments that, you know, while you remain concerned about, let's say, global growth, global trade, you probably see some pressure on the pricing of some of these metals, where growth is certainly slowing, and you know, until we think we're at the bottom, I think, you know, it's difficult to get too excited. I don't think they're about to fall out of bed dramatically from these levels, because there is still a fairly good underlying demand out there. But it certainly doesn't put any wind in the sails of these commodities.
Yeah, but we are, you know, let's face it, compared with where the commodity super cycle ended off, we are sort of at historic lows still. And I recall an old mutual forecast towards the beginning of last year pointing out that if you look back over 80 or 90 years, commodities really are in a slump. And that's why there was a lot of optimism. There was a lot of optimism globally and also around South Africa more recently. Renee, perhaps we can just touch on some of the regulatory issues as well. We've had the mining charter. We've had some resolution on once empowered, always empowered. Are you seeing mining executives falling over each other to do deals? I haven't seen too much excitement, even though we've now got some famed policy certainty.
Yeah. The best thing that came out of the mining charter was that once empowered, always empowered, which I think was a big Damocles sword hanging over the industry. However, our labor is still efficient. It loves striking. I think we have more strike days than most countries in the world. I always remember somebody said that if our labor produces two widgets, American labor will produce five, and Chinese labor will produce seven. So could have been your show, actually. But that just shows how, you know, the efficiency of our labor compared to, so we're never going to be really competitive. The Rand, I think, is continuously going to save us because of that inefficiency, because we're just not as efficient as our competitors anywhere in the world. And that is the reason why we keep on producing platinum, because the Rand saves us. In terms of the other things that came out in the mining charter, I was pleasantly surprised that, and I think it reflects on Cyril, Cyril Ramaphosa, our president now, that he's actually becoming quite realistic about mining in the country and attracting foreign investment. But generally, I don't think that any foreign investor is even looking at South Africa to invest in the mining sector anyway. The gold guys tell me that they're having difficulty in getting meetings to promote their companies, South African gold companies in the UK and the US. There's just no interest. And I think it's not going to go away until, for example, somebody says, okay, you're not getting any tax, this is just my own view, you're not getting any taxes out of the mining sector anyway. Okay, let's have zero taxes for 5 years or 10 years or whatever it is. That would make those guys start waking up. And we have this black empowerment, sure, we've had it for 25 years now, and it's once empowered, always empowered, so that's okay. It's not going to become an issue in the future. Any sort of royalty that you have to pay, maybe drop the royalty as well and just say, okay guys, this is it, you hear it, you can come in, you take away all these fiscal barriers to investment in mining. And the problem is that I think there's zero chance of that happening.
And well, the sad reality then is there's zero chance of a long-term sustainable mining industry that can't attract capital, Renee. I mean, and the government has to ask itself whether it actually wants a mining industry at the end of the day. The benefits of the mining industry are not just in the taxes it pays, it's in the wages it pays, it's in the upstream and downstream purchases that it makes of, you know, from service providers, it's in foreign earnings, in export earnings, it's in all of these things. And I know the Minerals Council is trying to articulate this idea, but there is still a belief out there in certain circles that the mining industry needs to pay for the past and is exploitative. In this environment, it's not profitable. So, yeah, I don't know where we go from here. Andries, the mining in Durban happens in a couple of weeks. So hopefully we'll hear more from the mining minister there on the approach that government might take in this environment and against this backdrop. What are your thoughts on how we can try and reinvigorate and kickstart growth in South Africa's mining sector?
I think we're in the middle of a structural change from deep-level conventional mining, gold and platinum in the main, through to our bulk commodities, base metals, open cast, much more mechanized, much labor content. And you see it in the total mining production for our country over the last 15 years. It's been flat. While gold and platinum has been dropping off, we've had exceptional growth in likes of manganese, iron ore, chrome, and that has really supported the mining industry in our country. It's not quite fair to say the government's not getting any taxes, because they are getting out of the value created by the mining companies well in excess of 20% of that value, and a fair bit of that is coming out of employee taxes, royalties and income taxes. We spoke about the industry battling. The coal industry actually did exceptionally well last year. I know prices came off towards the last 2 months, but the coal industry did well. On the back of China implementing green processes in ours, so not mining their bad coal and actually importing more coal. And that has supported our industry. So that structural change, I think, will help the country going forward.
And perhaps we could also start pig farming to feed into that that Chinese theme as well. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. Champs, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts on the base and precious metals outlook for 2019.